1. That's un-Sarah-like specificity. Faith scribbled the time in the margins. She realized, if Josephine died between noon and 1, that means Angie had her in the trunk of her car until she left the body at the funeral home just before 8:30 p.m.
There was a lot of blood in the back seat, all type B negative, and a little blood in the trunk that Sarah says could have been left post-mortem from the chest wound.
Faith shivered at the coldness it would take to drive around with your own child bleeding to death in the back of your car.
It's a timing issue, Amanda said. Angie is dragging out the clock. That's why she waited so long to get rid of the body.
Or something changed in her plan, Faith guessed, but she really had no idea. She saw Amanda's earlier logic, because Will was the one person who could probably figure out what Angie was thinking. He knew her motivations. He knew what she was capable of, but it wasn't just Will she was fucking with. Angie's worked murder cases before. She knows what it's like. All the blood and violence freaks you out no matter how many times you've seen it. You're panicked you're going to miss something. You can't turn off your brain. You can't sleep, even when there's time. Throw in the emotional angle, and she's basically put us in Gitmo. Amanda said, I'll say what I said this morning. We're missing something big.
Maybe Reuben Figueroa can offer an explanation.
She closed her notebook. All of the sense was gone. Her notes looked like one of Emma's coloring projects.
I'll never get back to sleep after this. I could use one of your Xanax.
She looked up at Amanda.
What are you doing carrying around Xanax, anyway?
Just a little trick from the old days.
Amanda turned back to the steering wheel.
You have a suspect who's too jumpy to talk. You crush half a pill into his coffee. He gets a little loosey-goosey, and you have him sign on the dotted line.
I can think of 16 different ways that's illegal.
Only 16. Amanda chuckled as she pulled back onto the road. Talk to your mother. She's the one who came up with it.
Faith could see her mother doing this in the 70s, but she couldn't see Amanda doing it now, which meant that she dodged another question. Pressing her was not a mountain Faith was prepared to climb.
How are we going to approach Reuben? Is this a death notification or an interrogation? His wife has been missing since at least Sunday night. He hasn't filed a report.
We should handle this just as we would handle any suspicious death of a spouse, Amanda reminded her. The husband is the first suspect. More women are murdered by their intimate partners than by any other group.
Why do you think I stopped dating?
The comment was meant as a joke, but Amanda cut her a side look.
Don't let this job turn you off men, Faith.
Faith studied Amanda. This was the second time in as many days that she had tried to give her dating advice. Where is this coming from?
Experience, Amanda said. Take it from a woman who has been doing this job for a very long time. It's simple statistics. Men commit the most violent crimes. Everyone knows that, but not everyone sees it played out in the real world every single day like you and I do. Remind yourself that Will is a good man. At least when he's not being pig-headed. Charlie Reed is exceptional, not that you should repeat that. Your thing with Emma's father didn't work out, but he's still a good guy. Your father was a saint. Your brother can be an ass, but he would do anything for you. Jeremy is perfect in every way. Your Uncle Kenny is...
a cheater and a womanizer?
Don't miss the forest for the trees, Faith. Kenny adores you. He's still a good person. It just didn't work out for us. But there's someone out there who could work out for you. Don't let the job tell you otherwise.
She tapped her foot on the brake.
What was the street number?
Faith hadn't realized they were already on Cherokee Drive. She pointed to a large stone mailbox a few houses down from the country club.
There.
Amanda turned into the driveway. An enormous black gate blocked her progress. She pressed the button on the security keypad. She waved at the security camera discreetly mounted in the tall bushes that blocked the view of the house from the road. The Figueroas obviously valued their privacy. Faith guessed
There was enough front yard for a football field. Still, she could make out the glimmer of lights on the bottom floor.
They're already awake. Do you think the press got wind of this?
If they did, we have a small pool of suspects who could have leaked the news.
Collier again. He was the proverbial bad penny. If he knew Angie, did that mean he knew Dale Harding? And if Harding and Angie were the types of cops that Holden Collier kept company with, what did that say about Collier? Faith was a big believer in guilt by association. She asked Amanda,
"Have you ever heard of a woman named Virginia Souza?"
Amanda shook her head. "Collier mentioned her before." Faith found her phone in her pocket. She read back through his texts, looking for the woman's name. Virginia Souza. Collier tracked her down because she worked Delilah's corner. So they probably had the same pimp. Family said she OD'd 6 months ago, but that's from Collier, and I don't trust Collier because he's a lying liar.
You sound so much like your mother sometimes.
I wish I could tell whether or not that was a compliment.
Faith searched the state database for Virginia Souza's rap sheet. Here we go. 57 years old, which is a bit long in the tooth for a whore. Prostitution times 1,000, going back to the late 70s. Child endangerment, child neglect, accessory to the exploitation of a child, none of which Collier mentioned. Faith felt a cramp in her thumb as she paged through the woman's sordid criminal history. Several drunken disorderlies, shoplifting, no drug violations, which is odd since the family said she OD'd 6 months ago. Or Collier said the family said she OD'd 6 months ago. Two assaults, both on minors. Collier told me about those, suspect in the kidnapping of a minor, suspect in another exploitation. She really has a thing for kids. Known aliases. Sue, Susie, Jenny, Jen, Mama.
Mama in charge,
Amanda said, using the colloquialism for a pimp's right-hand woman.
She's a bottom girl.
Makes sense, considering her age and her sheet. All these assaults on kids, that could be her doing the pimp's job, keeping the stable in line.
What is taking these people so long?
Amanda pressed the buzzer on the gate a second time, keeping her finger down long enough to make it clear she wasn't going to go away.
Do you have a phone number?
Faith was about to look when the gate started to open.
Finally, Amanda said.
The driveway curved to the left, leading them toward a detached six-car garage at the rear corner of the house. Amanda pulled into the motor court, parking beside a Tesla SUV. Striping had turned the pavement into a miniature basketball court with a goal set low enough to indicate Reuben Figueroa had built out the space for his six-year-old son.
Kip Kilpatrick,
Amanda said. Faith saw the agent standing in an open doorway. His suit was so shiny that it caught the security lights. He had a bottle of bright red sports drink in his hands that he tossed back and forth as he watched the car pull up. Will had underestimated the man's doucheness. Faith could smell it coming off him like damp in a basement.
Amanda said, "Here we go."
They both got out of the car. Amanda walked toward Kilpatrick. Faith glanced through the windows and the garage doors. Two Ferraris, a Porsche, and, in the last bay, a charcoal gray Range Rover, the same type of vehicle that was registered to Joe Figueroa. Amanda said,
"Mr. Kilpatrick, what a pleasure to see you twice in the same day."
He looked at his watch. "It's technically 2 days. Any particular reason you're out this late visiting another client of mine?"
"Why don't we discuss that inside with Mr. Figueroa?"
"Why don't we discuss that outside with me?"
"I find it odd that you're even here, Mr. Kilpatrick. Are you making a late house call?"
"You've got 5 seconds to either explain why you're here or to get off Mr. Figueroa's property." Amanda paused a moment to let some of the power shift.
"I'm looking for Josephine Figueroa, actually. She seems to be missing."
"She's in rehab," he said. "Left this morning, packed her into the car myself."
"Can you tell me the name of the facility?"
"No."
"Can you tell me when she'll return?"
"Nope." Amanda seldom hit walls, but Faith could see that she had found herself flat against Kilpatrick's denials. She finally laid down the truth.
2 hours ago, a body was found that was identified as Josephine Figueroa.
Kilpatrick dropped the bottle, which exploded against the pavement. Red liquid splashed all over the ground, his feet, his pants. He didn't move. He barely registered the mess. He was genuinely astonished.
Amanda said, "We need Mr. Figueroa to positively ID the body."
What? Kilpatrick started shaking his head. How did... What?
Do you need a minute?
He looked at the ground, noticed the spilled drink.
Are you sure?
He shook his head, and Faith could practically hear him coaching himself into putting his lawyer face back on.
I can do the ID. Where should I meet you? We have a photo, but it's...
Show me. Amanda already had her BlackBerry out. She showed him the picture she had taken of the woman's face. Kilpatrick flinched.
Jesus Christ! What happened to her? That's what we're here to find out.
Christ! He wiped his mouth with his sleeve.
Christ!
A shadow passed over the doorway, impossibly ominous, like a monster in a storybook. Reuben Figueroa came outside, careful not to get his shoes wet. He wore a badly wrinkled gray suit with a blue shirt and a black tie, shaved head, dark mustache and goatee. He was shockingly tall, his head nearly brushing the doorframe. He also had a paddle holster with a striker-fired Sig Sauer P320 clipped to his black leather belt. He wore the gun to the front and looked more than capable of using it.
Amanda said, "Mr. Figueroa, could we please speak with you?"
Reuben held out his hand, which was 3 times the size of Amanda's.
"Let me see the picture."
"No, man," Kilpatrick warned.
"You don't want to see that. Trust me."
Amanda gave Reuben her BlackBerry. The phone looked as small as a pack of gum in his enormous hand. He held the screen close to his face, head tilted as he studied the image. Faith was used to Will's height, but, comparatively, Reuben was a giant. Everything about him was bigger, stronger, more threatening. He had only said 5 words to them, but Faith felt every part of her being telling her that this man was not to be trusted. He was looking directly at a photograph of his dead wife, yet his face showed absolutely no emotion.
Amanda asked, "Is that your wife, Josephine Figueroa?"
"Joe." "Yes, it's her."
He handed the phone back to Amanda. He seemed positive about the ID, but his affect remained as flat as his tone of voice.
"Please come in."
Amanda could not hide her surprise at the invitation. She glanced back at Faith before entering the house. Kip Kilpatrick indicated he would take up the rear. He wasn't being a gentleman. He wanted to keep an eye on her. Fine by Faith. She made sure he saw her clock the Ruger AR-556 propped up against the door. The rifle had every bell and whistle. Magazine grip. Flash suppressor. Rear folding battle sight. Laser. 30-round magazine. Reuben led them down a long, tiled hallway. He was limping. There was a metal brace on his leg. Faith appreciated the slow pace because it gave her a chance to look around. Not that there was much to see. The house was spotless. Literally. There were no photographs on the stark white walls, no sneakers by the door, no clothes piled into the laundry room, no toys scattered into every corner. Faith didn't care whether or not a person lived in a mega mansion or a box. If you lived with a 6-year-old child, you lived with his shit. She saw no greasy fingerprints or scuffed baseboards or the scattered sticky Cheerios that inexplicably trailed every child like breadcrumbs. The living room was just as bare. This was not open concept. There was no line of sight from the kitchen, just a series of closed doors that could lead anywhere. No curtains softened the floor-to-ceiling windows. No artwork or plants warmed up the space. All of the furniture was raw steel and white leather, built to a basketball player's scale. The plush rug was white. The floor was white. If there was a kid living here, he was hermetically sealed.
Please,
Reuben indicated the couch. He didn't wait for the women to sit down. He took the chair that kept his back to the wall. Sitting, he was roughly Faith's height. His eyes were a weird, almost Confederate gray. There was a long Band-Aid on the side of his shaved head. The bump underneath was the size of a golf ball. She asked, "What happened to your head?" He didn't answer. He just stared at her with a look of mild disinterest, the way a lion might look at an ant. Amanda said,
"Thank you for talking with us, Mr. Figueroa. I'm so sorry for your loss."
She sat on the couch beside him. She had to teeter on the edge so that her feet would touch the ground. Kilpatrick was slumped into another chair, his feet dangling like Lily Tomlin playing Edith Ann. He seemed more upset than Joe's husband. His face had not fully recovered from the shock. Reuben was still looking at Faith, waiting for her to sit.
"I'm fine, thanks."
She didn't want to be scrambling to stand if something went wrong. There were a lot of things that could go wrong. She had spotted another assault rifle by the front door, an AK-47 that looked like it had been retrofitted with a bump fire stock, which effectively made the weapon a legal machine gun. There was a second handgun inside a heavy-looking hinged glass box on the coffee table. Another Sig Sauer, this one a reverse two-tone Mosquito. Amanda had a five-shot revolver in her purse that she kept inside a Crown Royal bag. Faith had her Glock in her leg holster. They would be no match for Reuben Figueroa. He was turned in his chair, his elbow resting on the back corner, so that his hand was less than 3 inches from the Sig on his hip. Reuben said,
"What happened to Joe?"
"We're not sure," Amanda admitted. "The autopsy has yet to be performed."
"When will that be done?"
"Later this morning."
"Where?"
"The morgue at Grady Hospital."
He waited for more details.
"The medical examiner for the Atlanta Police Department will perform the procedure, but someone from the GBI will be on hand to offer assistance."
"I want to be there, too."
Kilpatrick sat up.
"He's in shock," he told Amanda. "Of course he doesn't want to be there when his wife is autopsied."
He shot Reuben a look of warning.
"When did she die?"
"Perhaps Mr. Figueroa can tell us first how he spent yesterday, Monday."
"Don't," Kilpatrick said, but Reuben held up a hand to stop him.
"I was at my doctor's office first thing Monday morning.
As you can see, I've recently had surgery on my knee. I had to do a follow-up appointment. After that, I had a business meeting with Kip. Then we had another meeting with my lawyer, Dietmar Wittich. Then I was with my various bankers for the rest of the day. City Trust, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. Kip can give you their numbers."
Kilpatrick said,
"Obviously, none of the people Fig met with can tell you what they talked about, but I can get the times verified. The banks will have security footage. You'll probably have to get a warrant." "They're still late Monday night and into this morning," Amanda told Reuben. "Forgive me, but it seems odd that it's 2:30 in the morning and you're still dressed in a suit."
"That's why I delayed you at the gate," he said. "I felt it would be inappropriate to answer the door in my pajamas."
Amanda nodded, but she didn't point out that his suit looked like he'd been wearing it all day. Reuben asked,
"Where was she found?"
Amanda didn't answer the question.
"I was hoping you could help us with the timeline." She turned to Kilpatrick. "You said that you packed Joe into her car Monday morning."
"Figure of speech." Kilpatrick saw that he'd painted himself into a corner. "I packed the car for her Sunday night. I don't know what time she left Monday morning." Kilpatrick's eyes kept nervously going to Reuben.
"So, the last I saw her was Sunday night. We were at a party."
Faith asked, She drove herself to rehab in her own car.
Kilpatrick had seen Faith looking in the garage at Joe Figueroa's Range Rover.
I don't remember.
And you? Amanda asked Reuben.
Sunday night, Kilpatrick answered before his client could.
Reuben was at the party, too, so was Joe. She left early. Had a headache, wanted to pack, I don't know. Reuben took some pain pills when he got in. This is Sunday night after the party. He woke up Monday morning and assumed Joe had left for rehab. In a town car. Because her Rover was still here.
He was just making this up as he went along.
You know, with rehab, they don't let the patients make any calls home for the first 2 weeks, so we had no way of knowing whether or not she arrived at the clinic.
Amanda could have punched all kinds of holes in the story, but she only nodded.
Reuben asked,
"Who killed her?"
"We're not sure that she was murdered."
"The picture," Reuben said. "Someone hit her face, beat her."
He looked away. His clenched fists were the size of footballs. It was the first time he had registered any emotion about his wife.
"Who killed her?"
"Ms. Wagner," Kilpatrick interjected. "I feel that you should know that Joe had an oxy habit. It's pretty serious. Fig had no idea until she got busted. That's why she's in rehab. Was going to rehab."
He stopped to swallow, clearly flustered.
"You should be looking for her dealer, underworld people."
Faith remembered what Will had said about Angie supplying drugs to young girls, her way of helping them stay off the streets. Had she supplied drugs to Joe Figueroa, too?
"You have an impressive gun collection." Amanda looked around the room, pretending that she hadn't noticed the arsenal before. "Is it a hobby, or are you worried about your family?"
Reuben fixed his steely gray eyes on her.
"I take excellent care of my family."
Kilpatrick said, "Ms. Wagner, I'm sure you're familiar with Georgia HB 60, Sections 1 through 10. Law enforcement officers are not allowed to ask private, law-abiding citizens about guns or permits or any other weapons, concealed or visible, especially inside a private home."
Faith asked, "Did Joe say goodbye to Anthony?" Reuben's eyes narrowed.
"Yes."
Faith waited, but he obviously wasn't going to offer more. "Is Anthony here?"
"Yes."
"Can we talk to him? Maybe his mother." A phone rang, a piercing bell that for some reason made Faith's hand move toward her gun.
Reuben's hand moved too. Very slowly he reached into his pocket and pulled out an iPhone. Faith looked at Kilpatrick. He had moved to the edge of a seat, tensed, waiting. Reuben's eyes were no longer steely. His almost stone-like demeanor cracked just a little bit. They all watched him put the phone to his ear.
"No," he mumbled.
He waited.
"No,"
he mumbled again. He ended the call. He shook his head once at Kilpatrick. He kept the phone in his hand, which was all right by Faith, because she wanted his dominant hand to stay occupied.
"Sorry," he apologized. "Private matter."
"Reuben?" An older woman had pushed open one of the doors. She was African-American, impeccably dressed, with a choker of pearls around her neck. "Would you like me to bring your guest some tea or coffee?"
"No, ma'am, we're fine."
Reuben smoothed down his tie.
"Thank you. Everything is fine."
She hesitated, then backed out of the room. The exchange had taken seconds, but Faith had caught a glimpse of the woman's face. Her bottom lip was quivering.
Kilpatrick explained, "That's Joe's mother. She's got a heart condition. We'll wait to tell her the news when she can handle it."
"Forgive me," Amanda said, "but was Josephine adopted?"
Reuben had regained his composure. The flat effect was back.
"Yes. She was an infant when it happened. She never knew her mother."
"How sad."
Amanda coughed into her hand. She patted her chest and coughed again.
"I'm sorry to trouble you. Could I have some water?"
I'll get it. Faith walked toward the kitchen. Reuben started to stand, but Kilpatrick said, It's cool. Faith saw why it was cool as soon as she entered the kitchen. Bullet head. Tight black clothes. Laszlo Zivkovic was sitting at the kitchen island. He was eating ice cream from the carton. The woman, who had to be Miss Lindsay, stood on the other side. She was wringing a white towel in her hands, clearly unsettled by what was going on in the next room. The pearls hadn't been Faith's only tip-off. The older woman's lip quivered the exact same way Will had described it. Faith said, What a beautiful kitchen. Even though the kitchen more closely resembled a padded room at an asylum. The cabinets were white, the appliances were all hidden behind white panels. The marble countertop waterfalled onto the marble floor. Even the open staircase in the back of the room was a painfully bright white. Thank you, Miss Lindsay folded the towel. My son-in-law designed it. That explained a lot. Reuben might as well be a slab of marble himself. It must be a chore keeping it clean, especially with a little boy. Your daughter must have a lot of help. No, she does it all on her own, cleans the house, does all the cooking, the laundry. That's a lot of work, Faith repeated, especially with a little boy. Laszlo's spoon clattered onto the counter. He asked Faith, You need something in here? His Boston accent made him sound like he had cotton shoved into his cheeks. Filling a glass of water wouldn't take long enough, so she said, I volunteered to help with the tea. I'll get the kettle. Miss Lindsay opened and closed cabinet doors, which told Faith she didn't visit much.
Yo.
Laszlo tapped a spoon on the counter for attention. He pointed to a hot water dispenser, which meant that Laszlo had been here a lot. All these newfangled gadgets. Miss Lindsay started taking down mugs. White. Gigantic. Built for Reuben Figueroa, like everything else in the house. Faith started filling the mugs with hot water. The kitchen counter was so tall that she felt the need to lean up on her toes. She asked Miss Lindsay, Are you here to watch your grandson? She nodded but didn't speak. 6 years old, so he must be in first grade? Faith filled another mug. That's such a wonderful age. Everything is exciting. They're so funny and happy all the time. You just want to hold on to them forever. Miss Lindsay missed the counter. The mug shattered like ice against the marble floor, white flecks shooting everywhere. At first, no one moved. They stared at each other in some kind of Mexican standoff until Laszlo told the old woman, Go upstairs, sweetheart. I'll clean this up. Miss Lindsay looked at Faith. Her lip was quivering again. Faith said, I think you met my partner yesterday, Will Trent. Laszlo stood up. His boots crunched the broken ceramic on the floor.
Go upstairs and take care of Anthony. All this noise down here, you don't want him to wake up and get scared.
Of course. Miss Lindsay bit her lip to stop the quiver. She told Faith, Good evening. Her cane clunked against the floor as she walked toward the back staircase. She turned to look at Faith. Then she started the arduous climb. What felt like an eternity passed before her feet disappeared. Laszlo's boots pulverized the broken mug as he took his place back at the kitchen bar. He gripped the spoon. He scooped some ice cream into his mouth and smacked his lips. His eyes were on Faith's breasts. He said, Nice tits. She said, You too. Faith used her shoe to kick open the swinging door, knowing it would leave a mark. Amanda was already off the couch, her purse in her hands. She said,
Thank you, Mr. Figueroa. We'll be in touch. Again, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Kilpatrick showed them out. He let them take the lead down the hallway like he was afraid they would dart off and find something he couldn't explain away. At the back door, he told Amanda, If you have any more questions for Fig, call my cell. Number's on my card.
We'll need him to positively ID the body. A DNA sample would be helpful, too.
Kilpatrick smirked at the suggestion. No lawyer willingly gave up a client's DNA. Take another picture once you have her cleaned up. We'll go from there.
Wonderful, Amanda said. I look forward to seeing you in a few hours.
Kilpatrick wouldn't stop smirking.
Yeah, that on-the-record interview with Marcus that you talked Dittmar into agreeing to yesterday, that ain't gonna happen. Call Dittmar if you don't believe me.
He didn't slam the door because he didn't have to. Amanda gripped her purse like she wanted to strangle it as she walked to the car. Faith walked backward. Looking up at the second-floor windows, there were no lights on. No Miss Lindsay peering out from behind the curtains. Faith had the same feeling that Will had described before. Something wasn't right. They both got into the car. They were both silent until the car was turning onto Cherokee. Amanda asked,
"Nothing from the mother?"
"Laszlo was there." Faith asked, "What about that phone call?" Kilpatrick almost jumped out of his skin.
"Curiouser and curiouser," Amanda said. "Reuben Figueroa is an angry man."
Faith would have said duh to anyone else. The guns lying around the house, the operating room aesthetic, Reuben Figueroa was a human checklist for a controlling husband. Whether or not that crossed into violence was an open-ended question. At the very least, it made sense that his wife would be popping pills on her way to the grocery store. What didn't make sense was why she had been murdered.
Amanda said, "His alibi will hold, you know that. And I find it very convenient that his entire day was filled with people who are professionally bound by one legal standard or another to keep their mouths shut."
"Angie got her killed," Faith guessed. "That's what this is about. Not Marcus Rippey or Kilpatrick or Reuben or any of that. Angie did one of those Jerry Springer surprise, I'm your mother, things and trapped Joe into doing something that ended up getting her murdered."
"Don't let the tail wag the dog," Amanda warned. "I'm worried about the son, Anthony. Even I know there should be some toys or at least a few smudges on the glass coffee table.
Backpack, shoes, coloring books, crayons, matchbox cars, dirt." Faith had forgotten how much dirt boys dragged in. They were like lint traps to every particle of dust in the atmosphere. If a 6-year-old boy lives in that house, then his mother spends all day cleaning up after him. And she does it on her own, by the way. Miss Lindsay confirmed that Joe doesn't have help. She does the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry, just like a real housewife.
"Joe disappeared Sunday night. For all intents and purposes, it's now Tuesday morning. We'll assume the husband doesn't scrub toilets. Did Miss Lindsay take over the cleaning?"
"I don't see how. She could barely lean down with her cane. But you're right that something is going on with Anthony. I kept pressing her buttons on the kid, and she would have cracked if Laszlo hadn't been there," Faith said. "We can call the school. They'll give out truancy information. I'm assuming he's at E. Rivers. It's basically a publicly funded private school for rich white kids."
"It's too early. No one will be there until 6.
Faith yawned reflexively at the mention of the late hour. Amanda said,
"I want to talk to that Jane Doe that Will found in the building. She must have seen something. Where did she get all that coke?"
Faith was still yawning. Too much information was coming at her too fast. Her brain felt like a spinning top. Figueroa seemed unequivocal about the identification from the photo. How could he be sure? Her head is the size of a watermelon. Someone beat the shit out of her.
"Here's another problem." Amanda pointed to the clock on the radio. "We got there a little before 2:30 in the morning. They were all awake, dressed. Kilpatrick was there in a suit. Reuben was in a suit. Laszlo was there. The mother-in-law still had her pearls on. All the lights were on in the house. They were staying up for a reason."
Faith said, "Kilpatrick didn't know that Joe was dead."
"No," Amanda said. "He was shocked when I told him. You can't fake that."
Figueroa was in a knee brace, but he had that bump on his head. Someone took a heavy swing at him.
"Joe?"
Faith laughed, but only out of desperation.
"Angie, Delilah, Virginia Souza? The AK by the front door looks retrofitted for automatic."
The AR by the back door has a slide fire. That's 100 rounds in 7 seconds. Faith shook her head, trying to clear it. What the hell is going on in that house?
Concentrate. Kilpatrick is a fixer. Laszlo is a fixer. What problem were they there to fix?
If we're buying that Kilpatrick didn't know Joe was dead, then that's not the problem they were fixing, Faith reminded her. Miss Lindsay was at Kilpatrick's on Monday afternoon. That's when she saw Will. She was upset about something.
Her daughter was arrested for possession of drugs.
Yeah, last Thursday. Joe was out of jail by Saturday. Her mother was at Kilpatrick's with a new problem. A Monday problem. An after Harding was killed problem. An after her daughter disappeared but we're saying she's in rehab problem. Faith thought of another red flag. She went to Kilpatrick, not Reuben.
That phone call Reuben got a few minutes ago, that was strange.
It seemed like they were all waiting for a call. Even Miss Lindsay, the minute the phone rang, she stuck her head out of the kitchen to find out what was happening. Faith turned to Amanda. If the call wasn't about Joe, then the only thing I can think of that would upset Miss Lindsay that much is Anthony.
Put it together, Faith. Reuben Figueroa went to Kilpatrick's office Monday morning. Next, they both met with his lawyer. Reuben spent the rest of the day visiting 3 different banks, and now they're all at the house early in the morning, fully dressed, waiting for a phone call. What does that tell you?
Ransom, Faith said. Angie kidnapped her grandson. Chapter 11. Will paced outside Jane Doe's hospital room while her doctors did their morning rounds. He stuck his hands in his pockets as he paced. He felt weirdly exhilarated, almost giddy, even though he hadn't slept last night. He was thinking more clearly now than he had in the last 36 hours. Obviously, Angie thought she could wind him up with her mind games, but all she had done was laser-focus his desire to bring her down. And he was going to bring her down hard, because he knew exactly what she'd been doing.
Will, Faith said, what are you doing here?
He didn't stop to explain himself. Everything that had been knocking around his head for the last 7 hours exploded out of his mouth.
I looked back at my notes from the Rippy rape investigation. Reuben Figueroa was Rippy's main alibi at the party, and Joe Figueroa was her husband's main alibi. Angie knew this. She also figured out that Joe was a junkie, and junkies are really easy to control. She manipulated Joe into blackmailing her husband. If Joe broke Reuben's alibi, then that broke Rippy's alibi and the whole thing came crumbling down. But instead of caving in and paying them off, Reuben went to Kilpatrick. Kilpatrick put Harding onto solving the problem. Harding called the cops in to bust Joe, and when that didn't shut her up, he solved it by killing her.
He felt himself smiling because all the clues had been there right from the beginning.
Angie called me to clean up the mess because that's what she does.
Faith didn't say anything for a few seconds. Finally, she asked, how would Angie know about the witness statements?
They were in my files at home. She must have seen them. I know she saw them.
He realized he was talking too fast and too loud. He slowed himself down.
She mixed up the witness statements. She knows my system, the color coding, and she mixed them up to let me know that she'd seen them.
Where's Sarah?
Downstairs watching the autopsy.
He gripped Faith's arms.
Listen to me. Angie lost her leverage when Joe died. She's trying to get us. We think Angie kidnapped her grandson.
Will felt his grip loosen on her arms.
He wasn't at school yesterday. He didn't show up this morning.
Will scanned her eyes, trying to understand where this was coming from.
He could have a cold or...
Come over here.
She led him to the chairs across from the nurse's station. She made him sit down, but she stood in front of him, stood over him, really, and told him what she and Amanda had found. Will's earlier elation over cracking the case started to dissipate the moment she mentioned Miss Lindsay poking her head out when the phone rang. By the time she had finished recapping the last few hours, Will was leaned over in the chair, his hands clasped between his knees, completely deflated. Everything she said made perfect sense. The lawyers and bankers made sense. The expectation around the phone call made sense.
The Angie getting her daughter murdered and still trying to pull some cash out of it made sense. What was wrong with him? How had he loved such a despicable person? Faith said, "You could be right about the blackmail plan going sideways. Only when Harding took out Joe..." Angie saw Anthony as the perfect stand-in. Will rubbed his face with his hands. Survival of the fittest. Angie always kept moving forward. She didn't worry about consequences because she never stuck around long enough to deal with them. He said, "I hit Collier." "I figured that out." "I wish you'd hit him harder." She covered a large yawn with the back of her hand. "We're going to have to rework Collier's side of the case. He lied about Virginia Souza's death by OD. She's alive and kicking as of last week. We've got footage of her at the jail posting a cash bail on an 18-year-old picked up for solicitation. Delilah Palmer is still our only solid lead. She could be a victim. She could be a perpetrator. Either way, the first person she'd go to for help is her pimp. We need to find Souza. If she really is the mama in charge, then she'll know who Delilah's pimp is. We get the pimp, we get Delilah." "Agent Trent," the doctor said. "You can talk to the patient now, but keep it brief and try not to excite her any more than she already is." Faith asked, "What's she excited about?" The doctor shrugged. "Free food, clean sheets, nurses to wait on her, cable TV. We replaced all of her blood, so this is probably the first time in decades she's been clean. She's been on the streets for 20 years. We're like the Ritz here." "Thanks," Faith asked Will. "Ready?" Will wanted to stand, but he felt like he was weighed down with lead. Yesterday's numbness had returned. Every lost minute of sleep slammed into him like a pile driver. "We can't do anything, can we? About Anthony? His father hasn't reported him missing. We can't demand to see him because we don't really have any proof that something's wrong. Reuben's got a wall of lawyers telling him his rights, and if he's as much of a control freak as you say, he's going to insist on handling all of this on his own." Faith said, "Amanda's working on a warrant to tap his phones. She's got 4 cars outside his house. If anyone leaves, they'll be followed. But you're right. You and I can't do anything right now except work our end of the case." Will felt the elephant from last night take a tentative step onto his chest. He shook it off. He wasn't going to humiliate himself again the way he had at the funeral home. "Angie said that Joe was my daughter. Sarah says my blood type doesn't rule me out." "Do you believe Angie?" He told Faith the only truth he knew. "All I can think about is punching her in the throat until her windpipe collapses so that I can see the panic in her eyes while she suffocates to death." "That's disturbingly specific." Faith got that expression on her face that told him she was going to try to mother him. "Why don't you go home and get some rest? It's been a tough couple of days. I can interview Jane Doe. Amanda should be here any minute. You probably shouldn't be talking to a potential witness anyway." "It's already tainted. I'm the one who found her." Will stood up. He straightened his tie. He had to take a cue from Angie and keep moving forward. If he let the stress get to him, if he had another stupid panic attack, he'd never be able to hold up his head again. "Let's do this." He let Faith lead the way. Jane Doe 2 was one of 3 Jane Does on the ward. Jane Doe 1 was in a quiet room at the end of the hall. Jane Doe 3 had a cop outside her door. Grady was Atlanta's only publicly funded hospital. There were a lot of Does here. Their particular Jane Doe was in a tiny room sectioned off by a glass window and a heavy wooden door that wouldn't close all the way. Machines pumped and hissed. A heart monitor tracked beats. The lights had been left on. Both of Jane Doe's eyes were blackened because that's what happened when your nose collapsed into your face. Heavy bandages were wrapped around the top 2/3 of her head, leaving her mouth and chin exposed. Greasy brown hair puffed out between the gauze. 2 surgical drains, basically clear bags that caught excess fluid and blood from the wound, were dangling down either side of her face. She reminded Will of the Kolo clawfish from the bad Star Wars. Jane stopped eating her jello mid-bite when Faith and Will walked in.
Leave that door open. I don't want to end up being another black woman who dies mysteriously in police custody.
Faith said, First, you're not in police custody, and second, you're not black.
Shit. Jane rubbed at her white arms. How'd I manage to fuck up my life so bad then?
I'm assuming personal choice had something to do with it. Jane put down the empty cup. She sat back in bed. Her voice was raspy. She was older than Will had first thought, closer to 50. He had no idea why he'd ever thought she might be Angie.
Jane said, What do you want? I got a sponge bath in a few minutes, then Judge Mathis is on.
We want to talk to you about Sunday night.
What's today?
Tuesday.
Holy shit, that was some blow.
The drain bags flopped against her cheeks as she laughed.
God damn, bitch. Sunday I was on the moon.
Faith gave Will the look that said she didn't have the patience for this. He told Jane,
I feel like we got off on the wrong foot. I'm Special Agent Trent with the GBI. This is my colleague, Faith Mitchell.
Call me Dr. Doe on account of I'm in a hospital.
Will doubted the woman was carrying an ID, and he couldn't fingerprint her without arresting her, which brought its own problems. He said,
All right, Dr. Doe. Someone was murdered Sunday night in the building across the street from where we found you Monday morning.
She asked,
Shot?
We're not sure.
Did you hear a gunshot?
Jane leveled him with a gaze.
Do you know that at least once a year a dog shoots somebody?
She seemed to think this was useful information.
You ask me, people should be real careful about keeping dogs in their homes. Aha. Uh-huh.
She looked past Will. Amanda was in the doorway. Jane said,
The captain always commands from the back of the ship.
Amanda accepted the compliment with a nod of her head.
Agent Mitchell, why hasn't this suspect been transferred to the prison ward downstairs?
Faith said, You mean the one with no TV or sponge baths?
Damn, bitches, you don't gotta go DEFCON so fast.
Jane struggled to sit up in the bed.
All right, I got information. What's in it for me?
Amanda said,
You've got one more day in the ICU, then you'll be transferred downstairs to the regular patient wards. I can get you a couple of extra days on the ward. After that, you'll be enrolled in a treatment program. Nah, I don't need no program. I'm back on the coke as soon as I get out of here. I'll take the extra 2 days, though, and you'll give it to me because I was in the building when it happened.
The office building? Will asked.
No, the what's it, the one with the balcony.
Her brown teeth showed in a smile beneath the bandages.
Now I got your attention.
Faith crossed her arms. What time did you get there?
Oh, shit. They stole my Rolex.
She patted her wrist.
What time? How do I know what time it is, bitch? It was dark outside. There was a full moon. It was Sunday. That's what I know.
Faith stepped back so that Amanda could take over. She knew when a witness had turned against her. Amanda said,
Start with the gunshot.
I was across the street in the office building, bedding down for the night, right? Then I hear this gunshot, and I'm like, What the fuck? Like, could it be a backfire from a car? Could it be a gangbanger, which holy shit, that ain't my jam.
She coughed to clear some phlegm from her throat.
Anyway, so I'm lying there, thinking about, what can I do? Then I decide I need to check it out in case there's some kind of gang thing going down. Get my ass out of there, you know?
Amanda nodded.
I'm on the third floor, tucked up in my crib, so it takes me a little while to get down. Place is a goddamn death trap. Before I'm out the door, I hear a car streak off like burning rubber.
Will bit his lip so a curse wouldn't slip out. Jane Doe had gotten there too late. Amanda clarified,
You heard a car leaving the scene? That's right. Did you see the car? Sort of. Looked black with some red along the bottom.
Angie's car was black with red stripes.
Jane said, But there was another car in the parking lot. White, kind of foreign looking.
Dale Harding's Kia.
And so I go back up to my crib, right? Don't need to get involved in that shit with cars running off in a hurry. I've been out there on the street long enough to know when a deal gone bad when I see it.
Will felt a moment of disappointment. But then Jane started talking again.
So I'm back up in my crib just lying there and I get to thinking, well, shit, you know what I'm thinking. Maybe I got it wrong. This is a transactional kind of neighborhood. I got some scratch in my pocket. There's a car outside that building. Another car just screeched off. It seems like there's gonna be a dealer inside, right? Simple economics.
She pushed herself up in the bed again.
So, I mosey on back across the parking lot, go inside the building, and it's dark as shit. Windows are tinted or something. I'm walking around blind, and then my eyes get with the program, and I see there's this gal on the floor. At first, I thought she was dead. Started checking her pockets, but then she moved, and I was like, whoa.
Amanda asked, "This is the bottom floor, not the upper level?"
Correctamundo.
Where was she lying on the floor, exactly?
Shit, I don't know. I'd need a map, right? Not like I was paying attention. I just walked into the building and boom, there she was.
What did she look like?
Dark hair. White gal. She's laid out on her side. Can't move her arms and legs, can barely move her head, but she's making this moaning sound, so I'm like, all right, that's it. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Only I can't because there's another car pulls up in the parking lot.
The same car?
Yeah, but I seen it for real this time. Square nose, like an older car, but I ain't no car expert, right?
Angie's Monte Carlo was black with a square nose. Why had she returned to the scene? Why had she left in the first place?
Amanda asked, how much time had passed since the car first peeled off?
Maybe about 30 minutes. I don't know. Don't have to punch a clock in my line of business.
Jane continued,
so the car is out front, so I booked it to the back, hid behind that bar thing, peeking out like...
She elongated her neck.
And I see this second bitch comes in, tall, white, long hair like the first one. Thinner. Don't ask me what her face looked like because who the hell can see in that place? Like a fucking tomb.
She pointed to the picture on her bedside table.
Gimme some of that, will you, honey?
Will was closest, so he poured some water into a styrofoam cup. Jane took a drink, drawing out the tension with a loud gulping sound.
Okay, so the second bitch comes in and she's just fucking furious, right? Kicking things around, cursing, motherfuck this, motherfuck that.
Definitely Angie. But why was she mad? What had she screwed up?
She goes upstairs like she's marching against Hitler, you know what I mean? Feet just pounding.
She put down her cup.
I hear her upstairs doing what, I don't know. Throwing shit around, going in and out of rooms, leaving shit, moving shit.
Staging the crime scene.
She's got a flashlight. Did I tell you that?
Amanda said, no.
One of them little lights that's real strong. That's why I'm not leaving my cover, right? Didn't want that light shining on me. Who knows what the bitch would do?
She went silent. Amanda repeated,
and? Oh. Well, eventually the bitch came back downstairs. She says another couple of three motherfucks, kicks the chick on the floor real hard. And the chick, she moans loud like, That's when it got interesting.
Again, Jane went silent.
Amanda warned, don't draw this out. All right, I'm just trying to have some fun here. I don't get to talk to people much.
Jane took another drink of water.
So, bitch just stands there listening to her moan for a couple of minutes, staring down at her like, you piece of shit. Then, wham,
bitch just grabs the chick by the leg and starts dragging her out of the building. And man, she shook her head, that chick was moaning before, but when the bitch yanked on her leg, that's when the screaming started.
Will felt a pain in his jaw. Had Angie dragged her own mortally wounded, paralyzed daughter out of the building?
Then bitch comes back in again and starts kicking things around again,
hiding the fact that she'd dragged a body across the floor.
She leaves for real this time. Next thing I hear is something like a car door slamming, lots of car doors slamming.
Faith asked, could it have been a trunk?
I don't got, like, radar ears, bitch. It was just lots of things slamming shut on a car.
She looked exasperated. She didn't like Faith asking questions.
Anyway, then there's this whoosh. Like, I don't know what. Big whoosh. And I look up at the windows. Now the windows are blacked out, right? But I see these flames shooting up like a Viking funeral, just...
She waved her arm around.
All over the place.
She dropped her hand.
That's it. The car pulled away.
Amanda asked, did you see anyone else?
Nah, that's the truth. Just the bitch and the chick in the fire. No children. What the hell would a kid be doing there? It was the middle of the night, should be tucked up in bed.
Amanda asked,
you didn't go upstairs to see what the first woman did up there?
Jane licked her lips.
Well, I might've. Just out of curiosity.
Amanda rolled her hand, indicating she should continue.
There was a dude up there. Not dead, but just as good as. The light was better on account of the windows are right across from the balcony. And? Bastard was a fucking whale. Sleeping real sound, but like I said, not dead, but close. You could tell. Or at least I could. I seen some people die in my time. Pissed himself already. Had a doorknob in his neck. Like that guy from TV. You remember that show?
She snapped her fingers twice, like in the Addams Family. Will provided.
Lurch, but I think you mean Frankenstein.
That's right. She winked at him. I knew you were the smart one, honey.
Amanda said,
I'm waiting to hear where the coat came in. Dead guy's jacket pocket.
She patted her chest.
If I squatted down, stretched my arm real far, I could take it without getting blood all over me. 2 fucking grams. I ain't seen that much blow since I was a kid.
So you went across the street because...
I couldn't stay in there with that guy dying. That's just weird. And who knew if the bitch would come back? God damn, she already left and came back once.
Jane started breaking off pieces of styrofoam from the cup.
So I moseyed back across the street. Partied until the sun came up. Then the cops rolled in, so I was like, shit, I better cheese it up the stairs. Once I started climbing, I couldn't stop until I got to the top. That blow was fucking pure, man. 100%.
Will saw Faith roll her eyes. Every dealer said his blow was pure. Amanda asked,
is that it? You're not leaving anything out? Hell, it don't seem like it, but you never know, right?
Amanda typed on her BlackBerry.
I'm going to have another agent take your statement. He'll bring a sketch artist who will talk you through the night. Try to jog your memory. That seems like a lot of trouble to go through.
Consider it part of your get-out-of-jail-free card. Amanda motioned for Will and Faith to follow her out of the room. She walked a few feet down from Jane's room, stopping in front of the nurse's station. Faith asked, do we believe her?
Amanda said, Charlie found a blood stain on the lower level. He thought it came from a nosebleed.
Will said,
Angie could know how to stage a crime scene.
I'm trying to wrap my head around this. Faith tried to talk it out. Somehow Joe bled out in the room upstairs.